I know he's really excited about this, so now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome there to Gary.
I'm a grateful alcoholic. My name's Gary Morgan. That's probably the first time you people ever heard that. I was born Gary Morgan a couple of days ago. I'll get back to that. And my sponsor always told me, start at the beginning. So I will. I was born at a very young age, a great discomfort to my mother. Just like most of us. My father, James Earl Morgan, was killed at the start of World War II. I never saw him. He never saw me. I don't blame my alcoholism on him. He didn't blame his on me. He got killed. My mother remarried to a man who came out of the South Pacific during World War II, Vern Toon, and I took his name. He gave me his name. And he raised me like I was his own son, protected me like I was his own son. He was a great father. I have no bitches, moans, or anything else about what he did to me or for me. He did everything he could. My problem was that I didn't fit in. I was like a square peg in a round hole. I didn't understand where I was. I didn't understand people. When my mother and stepfather had been married a couple of years, he started work as a Wildcat oil well girl. And he went all over the world and he took her with him. And I stayed in the San Joaquin Valley over in Coalinga on a cattle ranch, and I was raised by my grandfather, full-blooded Chiricahua Apache, and my grandmother, a German, who was born and raised in Germany. You talk about steadfast crap, that's where it was. My drinking, I don't know when I had my first drink. I have no idea. I know I drank a little bit in high school. And before I started my senior year in high school, I decided that I was going to give the world the privilege of my vast array of knowledge. So I left and I joined the United States Navy in 1959. And I stayed there for 24 years. And I did all kind of weird stuff. And I drank. When I got to my first duty station was PBRs in Vietnam, and when I got there, the first thing I did was found out that it was less than a dollar for a quart of bathtub gin. Had to be because the label wasn't even dry yet from when they put it on there. And I don't know about the beer, but the gin and the vodka and the bourbon and stuff like that was real cheap, so that's what I did. And I went on operations and I found out we took some guys upriver and they made more money than I did and they were the same rate and maybe now. See, I was getting $63 a month to get shot at and thought it was great. First carton of cigarettes I ever bought in the Navy was 75 cents. That's how long ago it was. I'll give you my sobriety date, 8975. That's 463 months ago. I say that for one purpose and one purpose only, to impress a person in this room, me. It impresses the hell out of me because I shouldn't be here. I really should not be here tonight. I should be dead. And I'll get into some of that. I started drinking and I took them guys up river, found out they were underwater demolition, and I said, how do I get into it? So I volunteered for it. And the old adage, I didn't realize it, was my dad, my stepfather who had come back from, he said, don't volunteer for anything in the military, they'll make you do it. So I volunteered for it, went to Coronado, went through training. My first duty station, Da Nang, South Vietnam. Right back to Vietnam again. And I did that stuff. And then I did it for a little while longer, jumped out of a helicopter, screwed my leg up, couldn't run anymore, so I was bounced out of that. But they didn't leave me hanging because I was making decent money. So they sent me to the Navy's nuclear power school. I became a nuclear reactor operator. I said, I'm not stupid. I don't believe anybody in here is stupid. A lot of us are illiterate. I was. A lot of us are ignorant because you don't know it yet. Doesn't mean that you're stupid. Doesn't mean that you're dumb. Just means you don't know it yet. But when I went through that school, I learned a few things, and I started operating nuclear reactors, and I drank my way into and out of a whole bunch of stuff in the military. When I drank, I became, you know, I was a jackass waiting to happen. All you had to do was add alcohol, and I was instant jackass. If you don't believe that, go talk to my five ex-wives, and they'll tell you all about me. I found out I couldn't live with a woman or without. So, you know, if you got a good thing, spread it around. Yeah, right. When I drank, I would, you know, I started blacking out toward the end of my drinking. I remember one time in 1966, November, I started drinking on a Friday evening. I had been transferred to this ship to catch a ride back to Vietnam to do a special op. February 1967 was the next thing I remember. I was in a 3-month blackout. And when I woke up, there was a Marine general pinning some medals on my chest for what I had done. I don't know what I did. I can read about it. And I know what it was today just by reading about it. But I don't remember it. I have no recollection of it at all. Now, you would think that that would slow me down. After assembly was over, I got together with some guys, came up, patted me on the back, and I asked who they were, and they took me over to a barracks, found my locker. For some reason, I had a key, and I opened it up, changed the civilian clothes, and went over in town and got drunk. That was normal for me to do, was to drink at that time. And I drank my way into oblivion more times than I like to remember. Early on in my sobriety, I had to write stuff down, and it was kind of hard trying to write stuff down about a blackout when I didn't know what I'd done. And my sponsor told me, "You'll remember it." I've had two sponsors in this program. One I had for 35 years, the other one I had for about 10 or 12. One was a male, one was a female. And I worked out. They worked me. Early on, things weren't too good. Not good at all. I can tell you about my children. The first birthday I spent with my oldest daughter, she was 43 years old, because I didn't care. And I'm sure that her mother told her what I was like. Her mother never knew me sober. I'm a whole lot different sober than I was when I was drinking. Nobody in here would have liked me when I was drinking. At least I don't think you would have, because of the way I was. Today I like to think that I'm, you know, a lovable teddy bear, but sometimes the other things come out. Now, I can get angry just as fast as I did back then. It's just that I don't act on it, I don't react on it today. And it's through the teachings of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm able to do that today. You know, those of you who went to Saturday night meeting, you had a speaker from the A list. Well, I'm a speaker from the R or ST list down here somewhere. You know, I ain't all that good. So if you don't like what I'm saying, get up and walk out. I will not hold it against you whatsoever. But talk about being sober. In 1972, I went before the captains for another captain's mass. It's like going to court before a judge as far as the Navy is concerned. Only the difference is a Navy captain has 100% control over you and your money. And I didn't like that. And he sends me to a special court-martial. I went to that court-martial. They recommended that I get a bad conduct discharge. That was after 13 years in the Navy. And I had a chest full of all kinds of pretty little ribbons. And he says, "What I'm going to do for you is I'm going to have you go down, get your civilian clothes on, come back up here to my cabin, be here at 1800, 6 o'clock in the evening. So I did that. He says, come on. We went down, got in his car, and we were driving, and I asked him, where are we going? He says, we're going to an AA meeting. And I was kind of wondering, what the hell is he doing going to an AA meeting? He took me to Hollywood. Walked into that meeting, you could see all kinds of people that I've seen on the little screen and the big screen, walking around. He was the keynote speaker because he'd been sober 15 years. I didn't know that. See, we don't go around with AA tattooed on our forehead. We come from all walks of life. I've met people in this program, didn't have two nickels to rub together. I've met billionaires in this program that had all kind of money, all kind of prestige, and everything in between. I've been to meetings all over the world, and I've been fortunate in that fact. And I talk about that sometimes when I go back and forth. And you'll realize that I don't talk in one line. I talk all over the damn place. I suffer from CRS, can't remember stuff, or shit, or whatever, however you want to term it, you know. Bill called me up Monday and says, is there anything special we can do for you? I says, yeah, get a couple of poles and Stanley Cut dollies dancing around me. He says, nah, we can't do that. Then he'd have to get Thunder from Down Under for the women and everything else, you know. Anyway, I don't need anything special. All I need to do is open my mouth and talk as God tells me to talk. The first time I was ever scheduled to be the warm-up 10-minute speaker at a meeting, I got me some 3x5 cards and I wrote all kinds of stuff on it. And we're going to the meeting, me and my sponsor, OBN. And he looked over and said, what the hell are you doing? He said, I'm looking at these cards. This is what I'm going to talk about. I had a stack of cards this thick. I don't talk 10 minutes, you know. And he says, you might as well throw them damn things away. You ain't going to talk about that stuff anyway. That's like you go to meetings around here and say, we're going to talk about such and such a topic. How many people talk about that topic? None. Or just the person who, you know, got up and talked first. You know? And you'll hear all kinds of crap at these meetings. Has nothing to do with the Big Book. If you're going to do the program of Alcoholics Anonymous out of the Big Book, do it out of the Big Book. There's nothing in there that says 90 meetings in 90 days. If you find it, I want to see it. There's nothing in there that tells you don't get into a relationship in the first year. What's that mean? If you're married, you go home to your wife or your husband and you don't get in a relationship with them? That's a bunch of crap. That ain't going to happen. You got a girlfriend, you got a boyfriend, you got kids. You know, you get in a relationship with everybody. You got to start living a normal life. Be a productive member of society, your own society. And at first, it's kind of hard to do that because you got K-Fuck Radio playing in your head. And when that radio station starts playing, it will drive you insane. It did me. It did me for a while. And then I told my sponsor about it. He says, change the station. What a concept. Okay, how do I do that? Get the book out and read it. Have an idea of what you're talking about. Talk to other people. Get out of that self-pity crap. And he says, by the way, put your stick up. What stick? So that one you beat yourself up with. You know, what I had done wrong I thought was so damn bad that there was no way on God's green earth when I got to the fourth step that I was going to write it down. I put it under lock and key when I wrote it down. And there was no way that I was going to give my or do my fifth step with someone that I would see on a regular basis. So I went from San Diego to El Centro, found myself a meeting, went into that. Back then you could smoke at meetings. And a few old timers in here that know that. And when you went to meetings, the smoke level was about this high. Or this low, you know. And everybody was smoking. We had a designated coffee cup washer and ashtray washer after a meeting. Because you had to get rid of all that. All the meeting places, the ceiling was bright yellow from that. And this old man sat down at the end of the meeting. He had a wooden leg, cough, spit, and sputter, smoke a pack from non-filtered camels in an hour and a half meeting. Chain smoking. And I asked him, honestly, I knew that sucker was going to die. So I asked him, I said, can I do my fifth step with you? He says, yeah, no problem. So we went next door to a coffee shop. I started reading this stuff to him. And I hear this noise, you know, I'm really intent on reading it, and I'm not looking up, and I hear this noise. I look, this son of a bitch fell asleep. See, what I had done, I thought was so bad that he was going to turn me in and I was going to prison right away. It's not what it's about. I've listened to a lot of fifth steps over the time that I've been sober, a little over 38 years. And in that amount of time, I have learned, because my sponsor told me, you're there to listen, nothing else. You're just to hear what the person is saying. You don't have to kibitz, you don't have to talk back, you don't have to do nothing. Until afterwards, if they want to, fine. If they don't want to, don't get into it. I've heard fifth steps from males and females. Because that's all I do. I listen to what they have to say, because that's what it says. Admit it to yourself, to God, and to another human being. The exact nature of your wrongs. That's all they're there for. If you really got a problem with it, go find yourself a priest, because they can't, you know, do it under the guise of confession. They can't talk to nobody about it. And there's a whole bunch of them around that are aware of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous not only works for us, the last count that I heard is 163 different organizations that use the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And these are official through the central office in New York. I'm sure there's others that do it too. You know, you got OA, you got NA, you got Cigarettes Anonymous, Nicotine Anonymous, all that crap. They also got essays, Sex Anonymous. I went to one of those meetings. I want to know if they're getting too much, not enough, and talk about it. It wasn't what it was about. It was about the 12 steps. It was about the 12 steps and what they were doing to utilize that to overcome whatever they thought their addiction was. That's what we're doing here. That's what we do on a daily basis. I hear people say, well, the book tells me that I have to do a ritual every morning when I'm sitting on the throne. I got to have these 17 books and I got to read a page out of each one of them. Show me in that book where it says do that. I don't do it. I've never done it. I get up in the morning, sometimes I'll read, sometimes I won't. Sometimes I'll have a cigarette, sometimes I won't. Sometimes I'll have Rice Krispies, sometimes I won't. Big deal. But I stay sober on a daily basis. I do today what I did yesterday. I don't drink. The only thing perfect I've done in this program, the only thing, is not drink. I doubt that anybody in here could stay sober the way I have. From 8.5 to a little over 18 years, I did not go to an AA meeting. I stayed sober. I became a lunatic. I became a workaholic. I only worked half a week. There's 168 hours in a week. I only worked 84 of them. 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I thought I was hip, slick, and cool. Making good money, sending it home, not messing with anybody. What kind of life is that? It wasn't. I'll kind of explain a little bit about the way a person got me back into this. I used to be very, very engrossed in pro football. My team is the San Diego Chargers. They were playing on the East Coast in Miami, and I'm watching it on TV. Like I had something to do with the outcome of that game. Not a damn thing I got to do with it. But my wife stood between me and that TV set, held up a pair of her underwear and said, if you want to get in these things again, get your ass to a meeting. I got up and went to a meeting. I'm not stupid. You know, just because I got sober don't mean I got to be celibate. And those of you who are, God bless you. It ain't for me. You know, I'm an old man, so I can say that stuff. It's been a while anyway. But when I sobered up, I had problems because my mind was still going. Like I said, that radio station was still playing. And I'd have problems with people. I don't know if it was I had problems with those people or those people had problems with me because of my actions and reactions. I had not really got into the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous yet. There was one warrant officer, his last name was Yates. Well, back in the black and white days of TV, Clint Eastwood played a part in there, I don't remember, Rawhide. And he played a part, Rowdy Yates. So I started calling this warrant officer Rowdy. Oh, man, he hated that. And we butted heads. So I told my sponsor that I hated that sucker. He said, do you really hate him? I said, you're damn right I do. He said, that takes up your mind, your body, and your soul, just like love does. That's why there's a fine line between love and hate. See, he spent a lot of time in my head and didn't pay no rent. And that made me mad. Then he told me, he says, I need you to pray for him. Oh, I'm going to pray for that sucker and get the clap and give it to his wife. Or else I'm going to do all them prayers. He says, no. What I want you to do for 30 days, twice a day, is you pray for that person to have health and prosperity. And I says, you've got to be kidding. He said, no, go ahead and do it. So after about a week, week and a half, I met with him again. He asked me how that prayer was going. Doing great. He looked at me as a liar. He knew I was lying. I wasn't telling the truth. So I started doing it. I forced myself to do it. I wrote notes to myself so I would remember to do it. And after about a month or so, OB asked me again, says, how's that praying going? I said, man, it's surprising how much that man changed. He grabbed me by the front of the shirt, took me in the head, shoved my face in the mirror, says, that's the only person in the world you can change. I can't change any of them. I can't get nobody in this room sober but me. I am the only one that I can get sober. I can give you some information about what happened to me, and if something like that happened to you, you can try what I've tried, and if it works for you, fine. If it doesn't work for you, ain't nothing I can do about it. That's why we say, get suggestions. Go to many different meetings. Don't just go to one meeting. Go to a lot of meetings. That's why every time I went overseas sober, I went back to meetings. I went places I'd never go. You know, I went to a meeting in Hong Kong in 1978, about halfway up the hill to Victoria Peak in a church. And there was an old man leading the meeting, had on a paint-stained green leisure suit. Now, in Hong Kong, you get the best suit in the world made in 24 hours. I mean, that sucker looks sharp, and it ain't expensive. And I'm wondering who the hell this Brit was. Well, after the meeting, he says, well, let's go down to the Hilton Hotel at the bottom and have some tea and crumpets. Ain't figured out what a crumpet is yet. Probably some kind of cookie or something. So we get in there, and a maitre d' has fallen all over himself to get us all situated, what we wanted to drink, what we wanted to eat, everything like that. And I asked this guy, I says, what do you do anyway? He says, well, in the United States, I'd be the same thing as a Supreme Court Justice. I just do it for the British Crown Colonies. You know, shit. You know? And this guy's at an AA meeting. And he gave me his number. And about 6 months later, I came back to Hong Kong. And I called him up, told him where I was at. He said, I'll send a car down for you. We'll go to a meeting tonight. I said, okay. The chauffeur-driven, like the old 30s chauffeurs, where the chauffeur sits in front, uncovered, and people sitting back, all covered up, you know, drives up. This good-looking dolly jumps out of the back and says, hey, is Chief Tune here? Real British accent. And I says, yeah, that's me. She ran up, gave me a big hug, escorted me into that car. You think I would have told them guys I was with that was his daughter? Ain't gonna happen. I had something they didn't. See, I still get back into that crap. I can do that. And it's okay. I didn't act on it, but anyway. And we went to a meeting. See, I've met people like that all over the world. All over the Far East, all over Europe. I've been to meetings, they didn't speak English. There's always somebody there to interpret for me. That's why I love it when I go to a meeting and there's somebody there that can't hear, and there's somebody that does sign language for them, or you go to a Spanish-speaking meeting and someone there that will interpret for me. You know, I've been to Japanese meetings where somebody interpreted for me. I've been to meetings that, you know, were weird. I went to Fort Lauderdale, and I'm looking at the schedule because I got one, and it said this meeting, and right after it had a G, so I go to this meeting. I walk in. It was a gay meeting. And I thought, ah, shit, I screwed up. But I went ahead and sat down. I said, I'll see what happens. It was an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. They were dealing with their problems with alcohol. They weren't dealing with any other thing. You know, gay people don't see it as a problem. I don't care. That's theirs. It ain't mine. That's okay. How many people in here think that they are prejudiced? Raise your hand. Every person in this room is prejudiced. Every single one of you. Because if you like one color better than you do another, you are prejudiced against all the other colors. If you like one car better than the other. I didn't ask if anybody in here was racist. That's different. We need to understand the meanings of words. I come across one here just a little while ago, and I'll tell you about that. When I mention the word intercourse, what do you people think about? Sex? Got nothing to do with it. Intercourse means social communication between people. That's exactly what it means. Or you can go to Intercourse, Pennsylvania, and visit the Amish if you want to. I don't know why we'd want to. Except for the bread. They got good bread. Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life more times than I can care to remember. It got me through Vietnam. Total, I spent 7.5 years either in country or off the coast of Vietnam. And I came back alive. I understand post-traumatic stress syndrome and all that stuff. Okay. Fortunately for me, Alcoholics Anonymous has taken that away from me. A lot of things have been taken away from me. A few years ago, I was told I had 10 to 12 months to live. And I blurted that out at a meeting about 6-7 years ago. And when I did, after the meeting, some guy came up to me and he said something that I thought was kind of stupid. He said, "You ever get a second opinion?" I said, "No." What a concept, you know. So I went and got a second opinion. And that sucker told me the same thing. That pissed me off. See, I was in end-stage renal failure. I ended up on dialysis for 3.5 years. And it says you can live probably anywhere from 10 to 12, maybe longer, on dialysis if you choose. I get up 3 days a week, 4 o'clock in the morning, I was hooked up, and I was there for 4 hours. And it recirculated my blood. And then, go do whatever you're going to do. My kids were tested. A lot of people were tested. I got on a donor list and all that. I got a kidney transplant because someone donated a kidney, my ex-daughter-in-law. She wanted me around for the grandkids because she didn't have no grandparents. That's the only reason I got a kidney. Almost 4 years ago. And I, you know, it worked. I got a little bit of female, a little bit of black in me. I got my kidney from a black female. And it's okay. If you don't like it, go talk to your sponsor.
Yeah. That's right.
If you're doing what's in this book, you don't have to go talk to your sponsor. You talk to yourself. Because if you're doing what's in there, you are tolerant of yourself and other people. For me to be tolerant of someone else in this room, I got to be tolerant of me. I got to understand Gary. As much as I do understand Gary, I don't understand Gary worth a damn. Because I come up with all kinds of weird stuff. And you can ask people around here how weird I am sometimes. Being sober is probably one of the greatest things that I've ever done. God gave me life. That was my gift from Him. My gift to God is what I do with that life. And I've done pretty close to the right thing for the last few years. And I've been sober over half my life. And somebody told me today that I should talk about something. A few months ago, this guy asked me when I was born. I said I was born just before World War II started. He says, you know, plastic was invented during World War II, so you're older than plastic. I don't want to hear that. You know? But when I stop and think, you know, when I got here, I had dark brown hair. Ain't got too much of it anymore. But I'm still alive. I'm still alive because of what I have done. I have no idea how many times I went through those steps. A person last week or early this week told me that I do the steps on a daily basis, that they see what I'm doing. You know, I sponsor people, male and female, and I love it. And it's not because, you know, I'm going to jump in the sack with them, or male or female. I'm just not going to do it. But, you know, I said I'd get back to my female sponsor. When I met her, she was at a AA convention in Las Vegas. And her name was Bobby. She was an ex-madam of a couple of cat houses. And I was having problems dealing with women. And I asked her to be my sponsor, and she said, why? And I told her, because I had problems dealing with women. What makes you think that? And she says, well, by the time I was 30 years old, I was married to my sixth wife. Just sit down, son. We need to talk. And she gave me a book to read, and we'd discuss it. I'd call her on the phone. She'd call me. We'd discuss it. You know, how to make love with your spouse, with a person, with, you know. You don't make love to a person. You make them with. And it taught me. I didn't really practice all of that until later in life. And it has become a joy to be able to do that. A real joy. But I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. Other things I learned in AA books. See, when I went through the Navy's nuclear power school, I learned how to do nuclear physics calculus in my head. I was good at math. Real good. I couldn't balance a checkbook. And I spit that out at a meeting. And after the meeting, a guy grabbed a hold of me and says, hey, I'm a CPA. I'll show you how to do it. It took him 5 minutes. See, I had a mental block against it. I couldn't do it. But he showed me how to do it in less than 5 minutes. Had it not been for me being an Alcoholics Anonymous and had an open mind, I wouldn't have listened to him. Because it's too difficult. Yeah, right. We learn all kinds of things in here. We learn how to stay so. I'm not here to solve your sex problems, your money problems, your job problems, or any of that. If you got a problem with alcohol and we work on it, we can help each other. When I talk to another alcoholic about what's happening with me or what's happening with them, I win. I win. Hopefully they do too. A lot of them have told me that they're winning too. There's a lot of people in here that I know. There's new friends in here. I got no idea who you are. I'd like to meet every single one of you. Because when I came in here, people gave me things free. They gave it to me freely. I give it back as often and as good as I can. If you want to stay sober on a daily basis, do what I did today. I didn't drink. It's just that simple. You know, is it easy? Hell no. Do I have problems? Hell yes. Well, you got 38 years. I was walking in one of these stopping rocks here the other day and I seen this Red Fox or Red Dog beer. My first thought, I wonder what it tastes like. I don't know what it tastes like. I'd be in jail. You know? Somebody else got the damn key. When I took that 20-question quiz, is that question, you ever been in jail? I put no. My sponsor said, I thought you said you'd been in a Navy brig. I said, well, yeah. He says, crossbar hotel, buddy. Same damn thing. Somebody else is on the outside and they got the key and you can't get out. It was the same thing. I just looked at it different because it was called a different name. See, I was in denial. And that's not a river in Egypt either. I was going to say a lot more, but I don't know what to say, man. If you want to stay sober, grab a hold of somebody who has as much or less or more time than you do and talk. When I first got here, I wouldn't have said shit if I had a mouthful. Now sometimes you can't shut me up, and other times I just sit back and listen. I listen a lot because I got two ears and one mouth. I love being sober. I get to feel the euphoric feelings, I get to feel the bad feelings, and I get to understand those bad feelings because I dissect them. The way I dissect them is talking to other people. And when I talk to other people, I get a different perspective on me. I've been saved by AA many times. Since I sobered up, I had about 6 months sober. My wife was going to have a baby, going to have a cesarean a month before her due date or cut-up date, whatever the hell you want to call it. She started bleeding, so I rushed her to the hospital, Balboa Naval Hospital in San Diego. When I got there, the doctor got her stabilized. He asked me if I had any kids at home. He says, yeah, I got one with a babysitter next door. He says, go home. Take care of the kid. Come back in the morning. Nothing you can do now. It is night. My infinite wisdom, 6 months sober, I stopped at a beer bar. And I went down past the mirrors where you can look at your pretty self. And when I got down there where there wasn't no mirrors, I ordered myself a beer. The guy brought the beer down. Before I even touched that beer, I never did touch it, but before I would have touched it, he picked up my money and started toward the other end, and I seen this. What I saw, now I don't know if it's true, but what I saw was a hand-car sign, wooden sign, said the AA meeting's around the corner. I got him walked out. See, God has done for me what I couldn't do for myself at the time. He, you know, that thing could have said, you know, the head's around the corner to the left, as far as I know. I really don't know. I've been to a lot of bars, but I've never seen a sign like that. It's things like that that God has done for me. God has put people in my life. You know, I've put people like Bill Hatchman and famous Phil, you know. And, you know, Kevin, Mary, and, you know, I could sit here and name people off that have helped me to become who I am. Even redheaded Julie back here, you know. You see her one day it's red, the next day it's black, the next day it's green, whatever. You know. We do what we do to stay sober today. All kinds of things can happen. If you react badly to a bad situation, you're not doing this program right. It's like, you know, if sex is a pain in the ass, you're doing something wrong. And if you're having problems with this program, something's not right. So get around where you can get someone to give you a suggestion that maybe you can take. Try it. If it doesn't work, try someone else's suggestion. Big deal. You know, we're not cookie cutters. Every person in here cannot stay sober the same. No way. Like the guy said Saturday night, if you go through that book line by line and do it verbatim, you're probably going to screw up. But if you get the general idea and you go talk to other people that's been there before you, you'll get a different idea and a better idea. There's people around here that'll help you. There's people around here that'll hinder you. Find out which one is for you. Alcoholics Anonymous, like I said, saved my life more than once. And I'm very grateful to be here. Thank you.